It's time for JT the Brick.
JT, Raiders!
We are Raiders Radio.
I think you're dead spot on.
So what we're trying to do is get people who are passionate, who watch the game, who are passionate about the team, that preferably like the team because they're fans, make reactions and comments so we can run a fast-paced sports talk radio show. That's it. It's really simple.
JT the Brick.
The passion of that fan base, if we can recreate that here in Las Vegas.
I don't care if you like us or not.
I got to hear from some Raider fans today.
They show up, they scream, they're passionate.
Woo! Ready to roll.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Welcome back, JT with you. Hour number two of the show. Perfect timing, literally at this moment. Happy hour begins at every PT's in the Valley, 64-plus locations in Nevada. Go to PT's, happy hour 5 to 7, the best in town. Nobody can touch their happy hour, their prices, their sports, and the Vegas Golden Knights. Go watch the game there tonight, or pregame on the way in. They have shuttle service from Sierra Gold on Jones and the 215. I love their partnership with us. Thanks to PTs to fuel the monologue as we get going, hour number two. We'll have another monologue at the top of next hour. Eight monologues today, which is good. This is the second. Long night in front of me, but it's easy because it's the toy department of radio, sports radio, and the Vegas Golden Knights are at home coming off a victory, a shutout 6-0, and now Toronto comes to town. If you got an opinion on this game, give us a call, 876-1340, because I think some of the calls could be pretty good, or the tweets at JT the Brick, because fans are getting kind of chippy. You don't know if you're going to see a win when you go to T-Mobile anymore. Yeah. Used to be, yeah, I'm going to the game. They're going to win. I'll meet you in the bar. We'll hang out. What do you want to go get appetizers after the game? Now, get in your seat and see if they win the game. Can't guarantee anything there. They're better than Toronto. They've been better than Toronto since they've come into the league. They need to win the game. They're the better team tonight. Let's see how it plays out. Congratulations to Dave, who won the tickets. We'll give away tickets tomorrow and Thursday as we're giving away tickets to Wilder Ortiz. I'll be hosting one of these shows, I believe, down at Radio Row, going to another fight ringside. How lucky am I to be able to go to a fight here in town? Thanks to Urban Communications, everybody who puts this together, we thank them for their support of boxing here in Vegas. I want to get back to Monday Night Football last night, which I believe was a monster game. I predicted the Chargers would win because I thought they'd play really good in a must-win game. I was wrong. Phillip Rivers threw four interceptions in the game. Four. And he was the reason why they lost that game. Patrick Mahomes threw for the least amount of yards of his career in a game that he finished. Remember the game that he got hurt, he threw for less yards, but he got hurt in the game. Last night, he was able to win. He's not 100%. He can't run, nor does he want to run at the level that he used to run, coming off the kneecap dislocation. But I think overall he looked pretty good. But it was about Phillip Rivers and why Rivers was so mistake-prone, especially in the red zone. Mahomes to Kelce looked like it put the game away on the road in Mexico City. Here's when I actually knew it was over with this one.
First down, Mahomes. McCoy in the backfield. They're going to throw it deep near side. Kelce caught a run. Caught it. Touchdown! Kansas City and Mahomes right on the money and just drops the ball into the hands of Kelce. A 23-yard touchdown!
Obviously, Chiefs radio on the call. And then Rivers with the interception late. As he was going to the end zone, he was horrible in the game. And now I'm very confused about what to do with Phillip Rivers going forward. What do you do with him? I think it's very complicated. Doesn't San Diego, now L.A., owe Rivers one more year to open up the new stadium in L.A.? He might not be interested. His family lives in San Diego. He commutes every day from San Diego to L.A. He has 9 children. I repeat, 9 in his early 30s. It's an incredible number. What happens if Rivers, he doesn't get signed a new deal with the L.A. Chargers? Does he go play for the Bears? Maybe Carolina will want him if they get rid of Cam Newton. I don't know. I'm confused about this because the Chargers are 4-7. Their season's over. Their season's over before Thanksgiving. And now all the news is negative as they need to sell tickets. See, here in Vegas, I'm very abreast of what's happening at the Allegiant Stadium. When I go to meetings, when I'm in meetings and I hear about the tickets, I'm not blown away on how the Raiders exceeded expectations with their club seats, their luxury boxes, and everything. I knew it would work because it's Vegas and it's the Raiders. It's not working with the Chargers. So what do you do? What you have to do is you have to bring in someone who can sell tickets. And Rivers can no longer do that. Can Cam Newton do it? Well, I think Newton can do it better than Rivers. If you draft a rookie quarterback, he better be good. Maybe Tua will drop, and he'll drop to the Chargers, and they'll draft Tua. And the Hawaiian fan base that loves him will go to L.A. to see him play. I'm confused. I don't know what to do. I think the Chargers are going to do the right thing and give Rivers one more year to open up the new stadium. But if they get a better opportunity for Tom Brady. Now, last night on my satellite show, we talked all about that. Because Greg Bedard from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, who covers the NFL nationally, he put together a great idea on how Brady, who has a home in Southern California, could move there to a team that has a very good defense, Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram. So he'd go to a good team. Chargers are a good team. And then he'd sell tickets. He'd live close to home with his kids. And they would like it here. That's if he doesn't get along with Bill Belichick at the end. At some point, it's going to be Belichick or Brady. What happens if Brady's not happy in the offseason and the Chargers call? And here's the caveat. What if the Chargers say, Tom, not only are we bringing you to the Chargers if you look at the offer, we'll hire Josh McDaniel as the head coach. So you can bring your offensive coordinator with you and play for a year in Los Angeles or two and help us with the stadium. Would Brady consider that in L.A.? 876-1340. The guest I had on last night made a good point that Brady will listen. He'll listen to the deal because the offer would be a pretty aggressive offer. And maybe the Chargers are that desperate that they'd offer Tom Brady a two-year deal with a lot of front-loaded money to come here. And as Andrew Siciliano and I talked about last hour, it would be a Hollywood ending, literally. And he would get away from the Patriots. I tend to think that he's going to retire a Patriot. Rob Gronkowski announced today that he's having a beach bash with DJs the day before the Super Bowl. People were wondering if Gronk would come out of retirement for the announcement. I guess wrong. I thought he was going to be a part of the wrestling broadcast as Fox has taken over wrestling. Nope. He's going to throw Gronk Bash with Diplo and a bunch of really expensive DJs. This isn't a party at the Super Bowl that you can just roll into and walk on the beach and go into. It's going to be big. Bottle service, helicopters flying over, drones, big DJs. So that's Gronk. That was the big news earlier today. Let's get back to the post game last night. Anthony Lynn, the head coach of the Chargers, talking about Rivers and his future after a game like last night.
I don't have that luxury to think about Philip and the future and his contract. My focus is my very next game, the Denver Broncos. And at the end of the season, that'll take care of itself. But right now, we're just trying to finish the season on a positive note.
Yeah, that's the last thing the coach wanted to talk about after the game. Imagine that, having to talk about the contract of a franchise quarterback who's been the face of the franchise. Ugly way to lose. Phillip Rivers after the game on all the struggles they've been having, the turnovers, especially in the red zone.
How do you reconcile the fact that you pretty much moved the ball at will but just weren't able to get the points?
Yeah, that's kind of been our deal all year, though, I feel like. In Detroit game comes to mind between the 20s, and we scored 10 points. This game today, we moved it. Other than those two drives in the fourth quarter where our D got stops and we really should have done something with it down there when we had it inside our 10 twice, but we just didn't get going.
The last interception for Rivers to close out the game in a one-score game was brutal. You know, they could have scored and went for two and won the game and beat Kansas City. I think that was in the back of everyone's mind, but he threw just a terrible pass.
You know, obviously in hindsight, shouldn't throw it or throw it a little further. And I just thought, I didn't get fooled. I just made a poor throw.
Yeah, I like that. He owned it. He didn't get fooled. He just made a bad throw. You know, Bobby, people can't wait for a minute for me to finish the monologue, so we'll open up the phones at 876-1340. So that's what happens with Rivers. He's used to this. You know, Rivers now, in the Super Bowl era, has the most losses in NFL history ever under 7 points. It's now 61. Think of that stat. In the history of the NFL, since they've been keeping stats, no player in NFL history has lost more games than Phillip Rivers with 7 points or less. Now, what does that stat mean? I'll tell you what it means. It means that he's had some really good teams and he can't win. He's had really good teams and he can't win the big ones or the close ones. We've now seen enough of Rivers. I'm a fan. I think he's a Hall of Famer. He has Hall of Fame numbers, no debate. I think you move on from Phillip Rivers now. You don't give him a new contract. You go after a younger quarterback or a Cam Newton who's younger and maybe can help the franchise going forward. 876-1340. Darren, thanks for holding. You're up next. Go ahead.
Hey, bud. Love your show. I wanted to chime in on what you thought with Tom Brady going to the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
How are you? I mean, I get it. There's no way Tom Brady's going to leave arguably the best owner in the NFL to go to arguably the worst owner in the NFL.
Yes, I would agree. I would agree. But the reason why people are talking about it is that's where he lives. That's where he wants to retire to. That's where his wife wants to be. And it's L.A. It's a much bigger market. And if he doesn't get along with Belichick. And you would admit he's not happy in New England now. He doesn't look very happy.
I mean, can you sit there and tell me he's playing good football? Because he's not.
No.
You know what I mean? Just like Rivers. I was watching the game last night. He was awful. Like, just awful. Like, and I get, you know, his training and stuff like that. And I know Rivers doesn't train like that. But, you know, maybe it's time. But I just don't think he leaves New England and just the ownership to go to the joke that is the Chargers ownership.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for the call. I'm bringing it up because it's a rumor and people are talking about it from New England all the way to L.A. And it's something that people were bringing up after Rivers because Rivers was not supposed to leave. He was supposed to be there another year, and I think the Chargers today woke up and said, we're done. We can't do it. We know we can't win with them. Last year, they had a very good team. They went in. He was awful. And we've seen enough of the movie of Philip Rivers. We know how it ends. And it's a shame. Eli Manning and Rivers came out in the same draft. One thing that I'll tell you about Eli, Eli's had some average teams and some good teams and won the Super Bowl and the MVP of the Super Bowl twice. Rivers had just as good a teams as Eli had with the Giants. Rivers has had teams just as good as the Giants teams that won Super Bowls. And he can't do it. So what do? It's tough. There's not a lot of quarterbacks to go around, everybody. There's not a lot of quarterbacks out there. Where do you get them? You got to get them in the draft. And then if they're young players, it takes time to develop them. Then you get a guy like Mitchell Trubisky, and you go, whoa, let's trade up and get him. Let's move up and get him at number two. And then you get him, and you go, whoa, we're not even going to get through his rookie contract. We're going to have to move on from him. It's a roll of the dice. That's why I like Kyler Murray. I like Baker Mayfield. There are young quarterbacks I just stick with. They're going to develop. Let them go. Daniel Jones of the Giants. They're going to develop them. There's going to be some bumps in the road. But I would be furious if I was a Bengals fan in Oakland and Andy Dalton was warming up on the sidelines. He didn't get in the game for that kid Finley, who was terrible. Now, to cut off their nose when you look to spite your face and to see what we're seeing here with some coaches, they got better quarterbacks that they won't play because they want to play with the experimental quarterback who's a rookie. What? People are paying tickets. They're paying for tickets, and the coach is like, no, you sit. We're going to play a guy who can't help us really, but we just want to develop him. This is the NFL. You develop those guys at practice. They get developed in college. They come to the pros. You play them. That's why when you get Kyler Murray, Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield, Derek Carr in the second round. You let them play, and they're going to have ups and downs. But when you find the franchise quarterback, you stick with it. John Gruden talked about some of the movements they've been making. Preston Brown comes in, a linebacker who can make plays in this league. I think it's another backup coming in who's better than the starters.
We really liked him coming out of Louisville. He had three straight 100-tackle seasons as a Buffalo Bill, but he has the intangibles, first of all, that you look for in a middle linebacker. He's charismatic, he's intelligent, physical guy, football junkie, and he's been productive in the league. We'll put him in the room with Lippincott and Gunther, see if he can get caught up quickly, and we'll try to fast-track him.
I've been waiting a long time since a guy by the name of Greg Beekert, who wasn't a great player, he wasn't a pro bowler, but Beekert could play in this league. The Raiders have been looking for a middle linebacker for almost 20 years. And think of that. I mean, every team wants a star linebacker. The Raiders have swung and missed on that position for a long time. And you look back at what happened. They got Vontaze Burfict. They thought he'd be the answer. And he's done. He's done because he's suspended for 12 games for an illegal hit. So hopefully that helps there. Gruden feeling the confidence with these younger players. And the team is believing now that they can be this good and maybe keep winning more.
I really felt a sense of confidence when we hit the field. We expected to score. We expected to score a touchdown there, not a field goal. I didn't agree with that call, by the way, on the 1-yard line. But that's not an excuse. And then I felt our defense was excited about going out there and getting a closing stop. And that's a good feeling to have, a confident group, especially with the amount of youth that we have.
Yeah, more on Gruden and the younger players, Mad Max Crosby, Cleveland Farrell, Trayvon Mullen, Hunter Renfro, the youth of the team, that rookie class is really stepping up.
We're getting a lot of production. It's been pretty well documented from our rookie class. And we're going to continue to raise the bar for them. And for Raider fans out there, we do have five of the top 90 picks next year. We plan on adding five more really good players next year. So that's the exciting thing, and it's a credit to all the players and coaches. They worked well together.
It's a credit to John Gruden, who had a plan after he traded Amari Cooper and traded Khalil Mack, two of the best players that they had on the team, clearly, and they have a plan going forward. Hopefully it works, but it's a plan, and I cannot believe the amount of people that questioned Gruden's plan. He likes this roster being dynamic, players who can play multiple positions and step up in crunch time.
When we got here, we felt we needed to fix this roster, change the dynamic of the roster, become a 4-3 team. We had a lot of veteran players in the last year of their contract. We needed to draft. We needed to bring in some young people and correct our salary cap and do a lot of things.
And Gruden wanted to talk about the coaches. The coaching staff is a really good staff. They put a lot of work into this coaching staff after Jack Del Rio, who I thought had a pretty good coaching staff, really nice one. But Gruden wanted his own guys, he wanted his own coaches, and he's giving them some credit.
Taking a lot of pride over the years in hiring coaches that are the best, that have a similar interest in not really worrying about fourth-rounders or seventh-rounders or 37-year-olds or 17-year-old, 26-year-old guys. Just pay the best player and coach the guys that have earned the right. And that's kind of the flag that we wave here.
All right, so that's John Gruden. We'll talk to Bill Williamson, one of the longest-tenured Raider insiders out there. Show's brought to you by Remy Martin, the official cognac of the JT the Brick Show. Next time you stop in at Total Wine, you're in town, you go to Lee's Liquor, you'll see it, and you'll be blown away. The Remy Martin VSOP gift box is great looking for the holidays. The VSOP, the Remy Martin XO, which I really enjoy as I'm looking at highlights and I'm preparing over the weekend watching football. It's great over ice. It's great straight. When I'm breaking down X's and O's, I'm doing it with a Remy Martin signature cognac. When we come back, Bill Williamson will join us. We'll ask him about the Raiders' road ahead. Big one. Starts off with the Jets, who most people don't think the Jets are a great team. They're playing better. And what do the Raiders need to do in this matchup? Keep winning, baby. It's just win, baby. They've won three. Now beat the Jets, get to 7-4, and we'll have something big to talk about on this show.
But I thought, we had a couple penalties, holding call at midfield. We had two penalties on the same play after DeAndre's big run hurt us. Three sacks, put us way behind in the sticks while we're moving the ball, hurt us. We had the interception, uncharacteristic interception, and what that free safety did, Bates, on that play I've never seen before in that coverage. We had to fumble at the six-yard line, so those are things that I got to clean up myself. We have to clean up as coaches and players. And
John Gruden, JT, back with you. Thanks for joining us. Brought to you by Grimaldi's. Five locations here in Vegas. The best pizza I know. From Brooklyn under the bridge to the great locations here, the home of the $50 Grimaldi gift cards. We have a few to give away heading into fight week here. Bill Williamson, NFL writer for the 23rd straight season, one of the valued NFL Raider insiders that I like to go to. And Bill, you just heard that soundbite with the Raiders dead last in the NFL in penalty yards. What do the Raiders need to do to clean that up as they're on a playoff push?
Yeah, I mean, JT, thanks for having me. I don't know if there's any great answers when it comes to penalties. It's just, it's just awareness and fundamentals and figuring out in practice and executing in the games. Like I said, all those things are what every team do from April through the end of the season. So sometimes teams are just penalty prone, they're going to have to figure it out because, sooner or later it's going to bite you. And we all know that NFL referees like throwing that yellow laundry. So you either figure it out or you don't, and you're much better off figuring it out. But you can win. I mean, look at, they're dead last in yardage, and they got a winning record. So it's not, teams have won with this issue before, but it's just less of a headache and less self-destructive if you figure it out.
Bill Williamson joins us. Bill, in the beginning of the year when we thought that Antonio Brown, if he got his act together, would be with the Raiders, I thought they'd over-target him because that's the type of player he is. He'd get 11, 12 targets a game, so there wouldn't be enough footballs to go around for everybody. And now that they don't even have him, I think it's worse. Like, Waller has 56 receptions, 72 targets. Tyrell Williams only has 30 receptions. Renfro has 33. Jalen Richard has 19. Josh Jacobs, 17. Forster Moreau has 16 receptions and 4 touchdowns. I just feel like it puts a lot of stress on Carr to get everybody these touches in games because he has to be consistent with everybody.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a good problem to have several weapons. I mean, if you look at most teams that are really prolific on offense, there's only, 2-3 guys of big numbers. So, I think we're seeing the Raiders offense evolve as the season gets going along here, down the stretch. It's what I mean by that. We're seeing more guys get options. I mean, Darren Waller had, 44 catches in his first 6 games. He's only had 12 in the last 4.
Yeah.
You go, okay, is the league figuring him out? Is that a problem? Well, here, now you have Renfro has 19 of his 33 in that time span. So as long as you're spreading, as long as somebody's hot, and as long as somebody's moving the chains and somebody's open, I don't think that's a big problem. Now, if Darren Waller averages 3 catches a game the rest of the season, then you go, oh boy, has the league figured him out? Has he hit his limit? Is he, was he just kind of flash in the pan and we paid him a lot of money for the next few years? But I wouldn't worry about that quite yet. I think it's just ebbs and flows of the game, and now it's a challenge. Defense have answered the challenge of covering him, and now the Raiders have to get him open again. But again, there's other guys getting open, and Forrest Moreau is an exciting prospect. I mean, he's a guy that, could have a long career. So I don't see this as a big problem right now.
Bill Williamson is our guest, longtime Raider insider. Appreciate him joining us. For Derek Carr, 2,494 yards, 15 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, but the two numbers that jump out at you, third down completion percentage and his overall completion percentage is 72.3. I mean, he's way ahead of what Rich Gannon was at the same age as Gannon was a journeyman. Do you like the development of Carr and Gruden together, or do you expect more?
Yeah, I do like what they're doing together. I think that they're fitting well together. It may not be perfect. It may not be always spectacular, but that's okay. I mean, that's just the way the position is, and I don't know if he'll, ever be a top 5 guy, but if they're winning and he's not making mistakes, who cares? And those numbers that you pointed out are very important. The third down, I mean, there's nothing more important, And then the Raiders tweeted out a stat today, the PR did, that since week 6, his balls are traveling the furthest in the league, and that was the big knock on him.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's calling him a check down Charlie, so now he's kind of changing that narrative. But the key is, you got to get those balls longer, and they got to be caught. And it seems to be doing they're all doing a nice job. He completed his first 14 passes against the Bengals, so it's working.
Yeah, it is. A lot of things, as I'm saying, I'm throwing this out to you, and you're giving me great analysis and reminding it that it works. Bill Williamson's our guest. Tahir Whitehead has got 75 tackles. Next closest to him is Carl Joseph at 49. He's done for the year. And then you have a player like LaMarcus Joyner banged up. He's got 39 tackles. Max Crosby is incredible this year. The sacks, the 4 in the last game. And I just love the way that he's playing loose. He doesn't slow down. He seems like he has more energy in the fourth quarter when some of the offensive linemen he's going up against are breaking down.
Yeah, I mean, he's been exciting. I mean, other than the record and maybe Josh Jacobs, I mean, he's got to be the most exciting thing going on with this team right now, right? You know, everybody's dying for a great team to have a big-time pass rusher, and we know what happened last year. And let's see if this guy can really develop into that. Sometimes sacks can be deceiving. Sometimes sacks, you know, not so great complete players can get a lot of sacks, and then things kind of catch up to him. So I'm not saying that's what he is. We just don't know yet. I'm actually leaning towards thinking that he is the real deal. And, you know, some folks compared him to Jared Allen when he came out, and Jared Allen is probably going to end up in Canton. So I was like, whoa, you know, slow down here. But, I mean, what he's done, and but like what you said, he never slows down. That motor's always there. So he can be, the sky's the limit with him. You know, again, I don't want to sell him as, okay, he's there, he's going to be the next J.J. Watt. I'm not saying that. But boy, oh boy, there's been some tape that says, well, maybe, why can't he be?
Bill Williamson, as we wrap it up, you've been doing this a long time, and you know that some teams at the end of the year, when they're eliminated, they don't have a lot to play with and play for. They just shut down guys. They just don't have the energy to run out the rest of the schedule. The Raiders could run into a Charger team, which I believe is eliminated, Denver, who I also believe is eliminated. Those are the last two games of the year on the road. They also have the Titans and the Jaguars at home, the Jets this Sunday coming up, and then the game at the Chiefs. I think that's an impossible game when the schedule came out for them to win. Now it's a game that they can win. Navigate the rest of the schedule for me for the Raiders as they look to go 7-4 against the Jets Sunday.
Yeah, you know, I tweeted just about an hour ago that it's amazing to think that this late into the season, anything less than a winning record for the Raiders would be a major disappointment. I mean, that's 2-4. You know, that's a disaster at this point with that schedule that's facing them. And frankly, I think anything less than 10-6, you're pretty bummed out about. The schedule is just, it works out in their favor. Now, it didn't at the first 7-8 games a year, and they navigated it. So this is their prize. I think you're exactly right. I was thinking the same thing about the Broncos and the Chargers. You know, those two teams, they know how to screw things up. And why is anything going to be different late in the season? So very winnable games. They really should win those last two home games in Oakland. Be a lot of emotions. They're going to be the better team in both those games, I think. The tough one's Kansas City.
Yeah.
Kansas City plays New England after that. So if you lose it, it's not, I mean, it's not great because you will have two losses to Kansas City. But, you know, the key is really getting through this Jets game. I know a lot of people are worried that it's going to be a trap game. You know, the Jets are hot. The Jets are hot because they've played the Redskins and the Giants. There are so many bad teams in this league, and the Jets are one of them. But they at least can beat those teams. So, you know, the Jets are number one against the run, so that's something that you have to think about. But the Jets are pretty awful. So if the Raiders lose this game, it's all on them. They just got to get 7-4 and get to Kansas City and see what happens.
Bill, we always talk to you. We'll talk to you before the season wraps up in Oakland, but only two home games left in Oakland. What do you expect the Raiders to do as an organization? What do you expect the fans to be like in Oakland? Because I think many of them are starting to understand Vegas. They're seeing the stadium. They understand they can get here, and they understand it's going to be great. I'm not running into as many bitter Oakland fans, but there are only two games left. What do you think the reaction is going to be?
I think it's, you know, JT, sadly, we've had a lot of dress rehearsals. Three of them.
Yeah, good point.
So, I think what we're going to see is a lot of emotion, a lot of excitement because the team is good. I think that certainly helps. I mean, that place was rabid last Christmas Eve, and the Raiders were a team, what were they, 3-11 at that time. And, you know, it had the energy of a playoff game. So that the Jaguars are going to walk into a buzzsaw, and the Jaguars are going to be about a 4 or 5 win team at that point. So, you know, I know a lot of fans were bummed. That, hey, why couldn't we play our last game this season? Why couldn't it have been an AFC West opponent? But, hey, it's all about winning, and the Jaguars are going to be limping into there. So you did get a favor that way in the end. So So, yeah, I expect just a lot of emotion these last two games, and it's really kind of surreal that we're talking about it as, you know, the final two.
Yeah, especially as how long we both go back and understanding that there's so much unfinished business. Those games, just win those games, and it sets the Raiders up for a real shot at the playoffs. Good to talk to you again, Bill. You know, I always appreciate your time.
Oh, me too. Thanks, JT. We'll
you
see
got it. You got it, buddy. Bill Williamson, a fantastic NFL insider. Appreciate him coming on. Give him a follow, B. Williamson NFL. B. Williamson NFL. If you're an NFL fan, and I know you are, that's a great Twitter follower because he just puts out tons of information, and a lot of it has to do with the Raiders. When we come back, Nasty Nestor, the authority on the Ravens, which means he's the authority on Lamar Jackson, who's the front runner, I believe, now for the MVP. We talk to him once a month. Never dreamed my friend Nestor would have the Ravens back as a Super Bowl contender. That's one hell of an organization, the Ravens. Being a fan of that team, I feel pretty good about the future for the next 10 years if they can keep that QB healthy.
Lamar Jackson, pirouettes to the left, throws a strike to Ingram. Ducks under one tackler, the 10, to the 5, lunges at the 1, touchdown, Mark Ingram! T.O.B., thing of beauty.
What a story with Lamar Jackson. MVP favorite? Absolutely, according to Vegas now. It's a big deal. Nestor Aparicio, my longtime friend, he is the authority on the Ravens, and he has been for over two decades, and he joins us. Nest, good to talk to you again. You got to be living the dream, getting a chance to see this guy play at home every couple weeks.
You know, Brick, I'm heading out to L.A. I've never seen a game at the L.A. Memorial Coliseum, so I'm really excited about that because, you know, they didn't play football there for a quarter of a century, and as you know, you're getting it there in Vegas and the Raiders coming in. I looked at the schedule in 21. The Ravens play in Vegas in 21. So, you know, I'm trying to check these stadiums off, but, man, one game at a time. I mean, we go back 6 weeks ago, and it was what was wrong with the Ravens and what's wrong with the defense and can they get a pass rush and, you know, what are they going to do when someone slows Lamar down or if they kick the ball around? The last 6 weeks have been unbelievable, and we've got purple fever. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, we've had a team for a quarter of a century. The Ravens, while winning two Super Bowls, Brick, have never really been number one in any power ranking in November. You know, not that you want to be number one in the power rankings in November, but I think you know this sort of trend, being out in Vegas as you are, you know, that this is the sort of trend that you look at and say, where's the deficiency? Where's the weakness in the Ravens game? How are you going to defeat them? They beat Seattle. They beat New England. They demolished Deshaun Watson over the weekend. And, you know, it's always week to week to me. Pass rush was great last week. Game plans have been great. I think they've been really well coached. I think Eric DaCosta's got to be up for executive of the year when you consider Josh Bynes, L.J. Ford, Marcus Peters. Last week they went and got DeMonta Pekka and Ellis. You know, they have really fortified this team when injuries have happened, and they've happened with Tony Jefferson and Tavon Young. They've just picked up the slack. Now, offensively, it's all about Lamar, and it's all about the maturation of his game. And really, he's as dialed in as I've seen anyone for being able to week-to-week execute a game plan, not turn over the ball, be impeccable in his passing, and really, really good with his decision-making. And I know that everybody says, well, he's going to scramble, he's going to get hit. He's only really been hit once really hard all year. It was last week. He got running out in the middle of the field. Reed got a hold of him from Houston, but he hasn't been demolished through 10 games, and I know it only takes one, but he's playing the exact way they thought he would play 18 months ago, and everyone here is delighted.
Nestor Aparicio joins us. Tell us about the defenses. What is the calling card of this defense, considering you're great friends with Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, Terrell Suggs when they played there? You know, I know some of the players. I'm familiar with their names, but what's the key to why this team is now nasty again on defense?
Well, I would say this. The loss in the offseason, they've never had an attrition like they had here, right? I mean, they had the year where Ray and Ed left, you know, after a Super Bowl, right? But Mosley goes and gets the biggest contract in the market with the Jets. Za'Darius Smith gets paid with the Green Bay Packers. Eric Weddle, who we'll see out in L.A. this week, and Terrell Suggs left to go play for the Arizona Cardinals. All of that happened literally in 36 hours to the Ravens back in March. And picking up the pieces, signing Earl Thomas after he was injured last year and had his famous gurney middle finger for Pete Carroll and for the Seattle Seahawks, I don't know that it was a perfect fit here initially, and I don't know that things were normal initially. Certainly the linebacking core here, if you go back and look at the September games, just not good enough, just not good enough. And this organization has found ways to augment it. They went and grabbed Josh Bynes, who played in Arizona last year, played in Detroit. He was my guest this week, had a long conversation with him. He was a member of the Super Bowl team here back in 2013 as a puppy. And, you know, when Ray Lewis and those guys were around, he's now come back as the 30-something-year-old grizzled vet to shore up the linebacking core in the middle and to help to make sure everybody's aligned in the right places. The Marcus Peters pickup has been unbelievable. What it's allowed them to do, Brick, is the backside is so strong in getting out and guarding your DeAndre Hopkins and your tight ends and picking up your backs, that it's allowed Matt Judon and a couple of young guys. Jalen Ferguson's a guy they drafted this year. Tyus Bowser is a guy they drafted last year. And these were guys that were drafted to pin their ears back and go get the quarterback. And these were guys, much like Za'Darius Smith before, that were on the track to get paid. But as long as Suggs was here, he was going to take those snaps. And without Suggs being here, I think you've seen Matt Judon step in, not as good at setting the edge on the rush initially. His game has matured over 3-4 years. He's going to get a lot of money, Matthew Judon. Where's number 99? You'll see him running around on Monday night. So they have gotten better with their pass rush because their coverage has been so strong.
Nestor from WNST, tell us about Mark Ingram and what to expect with him. A lot of running backs break down. A lot of running backs have a short shelf life. Him and his run at Alabama was epic, and now he seems to have found a team that he loves. 667 yards, 8 touchdowns, and when Lamar breaks out and he looks like he's going to hand it off, then he pulls it away from him, and Lamar takes off. When he gives it to Ingram, he's been very productive.
You know, Brick, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I've watched this thing now for a year. I've now watched it for 10 weeks, where it's really gone from last year. And I know I laughed about this. I said it was like the magnetic board game last year. Remember that? When we were kids, we'd get that board game, and all the pieces would just go one direction. That's what it looked like last year. This year it looks like a ballet. It looks like synchronized football. I mean, Greg Roman has this thing working. And to be really honest on Ingram, when he gets the ball, you're almost happy, right? Like, if you got a chance of tackling him, you can catch him. You're going to get him to the ground eventually. Lamar, you know, he may take a dig on you, do a ballet step and be gone, and, you know, safeties are trying to catch him. Most guys on the field can't catch him, right? There's only two or three guys who might be able to get an angle on Lamar. So once he gets to the second level, your linebacker better be in front of him, not behind him. And he better not be 2 feet to the side of him and trying to catch him with the bad geometry, you know, when he's faster than you are. And that's what we've learned with Lamar. Brick, I've told this story the last couple weeks. We're up in the seats. I sit with all my, you know, my compadres up in Section 513 at the home games. And, you know, we're a good spirited football group, very knowledgeable. We don't, since all the yabos got out after the knee a couple years ago, we don't have stupid people yelling stupid stuff in my section. But there was a point where Mark Ingram took a handoff, and if Lamar didn't fake it, maybe Lamar could have gotten 25 yards. Mark Ingram got like 5-6 yards, and we're like in 2nd and 5, right? And we're all like, ah. And I'm like, I'm old enough to remember when 2nd and 5 was a really good down and distance, you know? You got 5 yards on first down, you felt really good about yourself. That's disappointing for the 2000. 5 yards on first down, it's like, what did we do wrong? We're not in 2nd and 2. We're not in 2nd and 1. And, Brick, unlike anything I've ever seen in the history of football, and I've been watching this a long time, I've never seen a team dominate on down and distance. They win first down most of the time.
Wow.
And when they lose, they're only getting 5 yards, not 8.
Nestor Aparicio, as we wrap it up. Now, big picture question, Baltimore, where you live. When we go back to Kaepernick, social injustice, Steve Biscotti possibly interested, John Harbaugh interested. What was the real story on the Ravens' interest? And now that workout, what happened in Atlanta as they moved it to a high school, Did Kaepernick blow an opportunity when his girlfriend spoke up when it came to Baltimore? And was that the better landing spot for him years ago, which clearly isn't anymore?
Well, I think that was the end, right? And, you know, the pig socks didn't go over well, right? I mean, I am on his side, right? I am a Kurt Flood guy. I am a guy who's been blackballed in my own industry, which you're well, you know, aware of. A billionaire, Peter Angelos, took my press pass after 21 years, called me fake news, all of that nonsense. And so, you know, I'm a fighter for social justice, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
I probably sit far left of much of your audience, quite frankly, politically. But when it comes to Kaepernick, he has been his own worst enemy. I would say this. The sham last week of trying to get him to sign a legal form to exonerate the NFL, I mean, it's disgraceful. What they've done to him is disgraceful. But that being said, he has been his own worst enemy. The Ravens were a team that were going to give him a shot. In my heart of hearts, I honestly believe that he had an opportunity in Baltimore a couple of summers ago. And the girlfriend thing out on Twitter, that's just... Steve Bisciotti has been through that with Ray Rice. This organization has been through jurisprudence with Ray Lewis and Jamal Lewis and the court of public opinion with Ray Rice. Steve Bisciotti doesn't want anything, much like a lot of other owners. A backup quarterback's not worth all that. You know, like,
mm-hmm.
And I think that's the way it would be viewed because of all of the everything that's happened. And I think it's unfortunate all the way around. It's not a good look for anybody, really, not for anybody.
You know, I love music. Michael McDonald's playing with the Doobie Brothers. I like when bands come back together. Our friend Steve Gorman wrote the book on the Black Crowes. It didn't work out. I don't like bands that come out of retirement after a breakup and they can't put the band back together again. Give our audience at night here an interest in music now. Who's the next band you're going to go see?
I'm going to see U2 in Tokyo in 2 weeks, and I'm going to Seoul. I've never been to Seoul. I've been to Tokyo. You know, honest to God, I got a cheap flight. And Brick, you can appreciate this because you do Raiders work. I had a trip to Buffalo, or I could go to Tokyo on a $400 flight. So I got a cheap flight to Tokyo. I've never been to Seoul. I love everything about food in Asia. I love everything about Asian culture. I'm probably not going to sleep. And the Ravens play the Buffalo Bills at 3 a.m. in Seoul, Korea. The concert is that night, so I'm going to be taking the tube back. And I'm going to be watching the Ravens and the Buffalo Bills at 3 a.m. Monday morning after seeing you two perform the Joshua Tree and hopefully Bad and hopefully a couple of other little ones, little gems, little Two Hearts Beat Is One or something like that. Give it to me, Brick.
You're the best. Talk to you soon. Keep it going with your Ravens.
Love you, Brick. Be well, man.
Thank you. There he is, Nestor Aparicio. How good of a hit was that? He is embedded with the Ravens. Are the Ravens the best team in football? Hard to say. They're right there at the top. It's the Niners. The Seahawks are playing well, Baltimore, and Bobby's New England Patriots. Just when I hope the Patriots are going to take a step back, Brady isn't even happy. Brady doesn't even feel like he's playing well. Brady is giving the defense the credit because he doesn't think he's doing enough. He's not carrying his own weight with this team. This Lamar Jackson thing, we're lucky. You don't have to root for the Ravens. I'm not asking you to. Why would you? Unless you're a fan. But isn't it great that we have him mixed into our TV? If we didn't have him without Andrew Luck, Andrew Luck retired. We picked up Lamar Jackson. Kyler Murray's in the league. He's outstanding. We got good young players. But a lot of the other quarterbacks, we do this from time to time. I'll go through this list of quarterbacks in this league, and it's shocking how many of them are bad or to compliment them below average. Baltimore is going to be around. As long as this kid, Lamar Jackson, doesn't get injured running. And as Nestor just said, he's only been hit hard once this year. But it will only take one hit to end his career, and I hope it never happens because I want to see him play. Baltimore at the Rams. Line opened up a pick 'em. Now it's Baltimore, a 3-point favorite in L.A. Whoa. Rams went to the Super Bowl. They have Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, Jared Goff, Todd Gurley. They got all those guys. And they're making Baltimore travel their longest trip of the year to L.A.? And Baltimore's the favorite? Man, I think there's going to be some sharp money coming in on the Rams. Rams are still fighting for their lives. It's a must win. They are fighting against the Seahawks and the Niners. I like the Rams in that game. Baltimore's the better team, but they're traveling to the Coliseum. What did he say? They haven't played there in 25 years. Big spot for Lamar Jackson in Hollywood under the bright lights of the Coliseum. Every great football player, dating back to the legends of Deacon Jones, Jim Brown, Vince Lombardi at the Super Bowl, have played at the L.A. Coliseum. Guess who hasn't? Lamar Jackson. That's going to be a gorgeous-looking evening. And with that guy running wild on the Coliseum grass, that is must-see TV. Can't wait to see that. Baltimore and the Rams, a total on that game, 46.5. Another game. I like the Rams, and I like it to go over the total. Now, normally I'd go home for a quick dinner break because I do another show at 8 o'clock. We are here for expanded Vegas Golden Knights pregame coverage, Bobby. So that is coming up next. We'll get you ready for that. Millard on the back end of this. And also we're going to get to the poll, the NCAA poll, the new college football poll. Love that on a Tuesday night. Adds a lot to the show. It's something that everybody's talking about. We'll get to that coming up on the other side. Hopefully you're on your way to PT's before the game or to watch the game, where you could be holding on to that lamp and get extra free play money, and you could have great food, great appetizers, and those great drink specials from 5 to 7. Watch the game, or if you're getting off work, midnight to 2. When we come back, I'll give it to you now. I'm pretty good at teasing ahead, Bobby. I learned that again, but why not? We got a few more moments. LSU is once again atop this week's edition of the College Football Playoff. Alabama at number 5. Here it is. LSU 1, the Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, Georgia 4. Then we have Alabama 5, Oregon 6, Utah 7, Penn State 8, Oklahoma at number 9, Minnesota at 10. Well, there you go. That's pretty good to me. But remember, Oregon is 6. They play Utah 7. Whoever loses that game will drop out of the top 10. So Pac-12 championship game, Oregon-Utah, that'll decide it. And remember, Georgia's going to play LSU, and Ohio State's going to play Penn State. Oklahoma still has an opportunity to move up. But I think the team that's really in the driver's seat to get into the Final Four will be Oregon if LSU beats Georgia in the SEC championship game.